Let me tell you of the days of high adventure.
Hi, I'm Kevin.
And I'm Eric.
And this is 6 Degrees of Schwarzenegger, the podcast where we take a long, hard look back at some of our favorite action movies from the era of Arnold.
Sorry, I lost it there. that was good. Schwarzenegger is the icon of the genre, and we're taking a deep dive into some of these 80s and 90s cult action movies and breaking them all the way down.
You better believe Schwarzenegger's the icon of the genre. He should have been in this movie.
He should have. It would have been amazing if he was in this movie.
He knew better.
Yeah, probably. Stay,
we're going to steer clear of this one.
I mean, even if it was just, I mean, what can you imagine if he played Tony?
A cameo? Yeah, he just pops up in one scene. Something like that.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
He's usually that type of dude, I feel like, who's like kind of tight with everyone he's ever worked with. But he knew better. He steered clear of this one.
Alas.
He was probably off making something happen.
Yeah.
I don't know what came after Predator for him.
Oh, I don't remember off
the
top of my head.
He might have had a dog shit movie or two before he got to Total Recall,
yeah,
which is awesome.
Yeah, I think Total Recall was the next major one for him.
Yeah, for sure.
But by Predator, he was like, well, Total Recall, and then it was Terminator 2 is what cemented him.
Yeah,
right?
That made him like the biggest star in the world,
yeah,
I think. Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
Before we get to Action Jackson stuff, I did want to share with you this story that came to mind. I was thinking about just the legendary Carl Weathers, and this was a story that he had told on one of the special features on Predator.
Okay.
Basically, he was saying, you know, like, the whole cast, everybody was staying in this hotel down in Mexico, wherever they were filming, and that they were all the guys were sharing the gym down there. So he said, you know, he had this thing about not wanting to work out in front of the other guys because he didn't want them to see how hard he worked out.
Yeah.
For some reason, like he said this thing, like he wanted them to think it was just all natural, you know, like, oh yeah, no, I don't work out that much. I'm just like naturally look like this, I guess, you know, like
right.
You don't want to let them see you sweat and everything like that. So he said, you know, if he went in there and someone else was in the gym, he'd like duck back out and come back later and see. But he said it got to the point that like he was waking up at 4 a.m. or something to go be the first one and get his pump in before anyone else came down. And I'm just like, it's such a weird, like this culture of like macho dude culture. You know, I love it. There was another story about, did I tell you the thing about Arnold Schwarzenegger and Jesse Ventura's arms? Like they're, no, you're giving me a look.
No, I'm giving you,
so,
yeah.
This is my all-time favorite story that I've ever heard.
Okay.
Like, basically, Jesse Ventura says, you know, I went in for my costume fitting, and I went in the costumer's trailer or whatever, and they're measuring me, and like, measure your waist and your inseam and all this, and they measured my biceps, and they're like writing it up on this chalkboard, and he said, and I noticed like my arms were bigger than Arnold's arms.
Oh, wow.
On the chalkboard. He said, you know, so later on, I saw Arnold, and I said, you know, like, oh, we should measure our arms.
Yeah.
And Arnold's like, you're right. We should measure our arms. and he's like, you know, why don't we put a bet on whose arms are going to be bigger? And Arnold's like, that sounds great. Like, let's bet a bottle of champagne. And then they measured and Arnold's were like 3 inches bigger because he had paid the costume people to put a wrong number next to his name on the thing. He's like, oh, well, I'm glad that means my joke worked then.
Because, oh my, you know, God.
It's just like, Jesus Christ, Arnold.
Oh, that is just bonkers.
Amazing story.
That is bonkers. I love that story so much that he would go that far.
Play his head games with people.
I mean, if you've seen Pumping Iron, it's like absolutely 100% he would do something like that.
Oh, he was like, those are the only, like a joke like that one with Jesse Ventura, that's like funny and in good humor.
Yeah.
And then I watched Pumping Iron and like,
oof,
how mean he was being to Lou Ferrigno was like borderline like bullying, like psychological warfare, trying to psych him out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I felt kind of bad for Lou on that. It was just like pushing the envelope of like, this is just sort of dirty and stuff. Like just childish shit to get an edge or whatever,
but
that's Arnold.
That is Arnold.
He is my God.
I bet he still is like that, honestly. I mean, if we're being real, truly honest, I suspect he still does
it was a great, did you watch the Oscars? Like him and DeVito were out there together.
Yeah, and they kept cutting back to Michael Keaton.
Yes,
too.
So they were making Batman jokes. I love just seeing those two together because Twins is one of my all-time favorites.
Is that third one still happening with Eddie Murphy?
I hope not.
Yeah.
Seeing them together made me worried.
Yeah. I mean, they both are showing their age big time.
For sure. That'd be a terrible idea.
Yeah.
I hope it doesn't happen, but nobody is afraid of getting a paycheck, I guess.
No, everybody loves a good paycheck. So, I know.
Even if they don't need it, you know.
Did that fourth Beverly Hills Cop movie come out yet?
Not yet.
Okay.
But it is coming. Right. That one's happening.
Yeah,
that one,
I saw the trailer for it.
And it actually looked like low key, very watchable.
I know. That was the thing. I was like, oh, this, I could watch this.
Yeah, Kevin Bacon and what's the kid's name? Who's in Dark Knight Rises?
Joseph Gordon Levitt?
Joseph Gordon Levitt is in there. Yeah, I'm definitely going to watch it.
And they brought back everybody. Judd Nelson. Judge Reinhold.
Judge Reinhold.
Oh, my God.
Bronson Pinchot.
Yeah, Bronson Pinchot's back.
Yeah. I'm going to be all over that shit.
Yeah.
But.
Anyway, so we're back.
We're not talking about any of those good movies.
No. We're stuck in the middle of Action Jackson land.
We're languishing.
So we're back.
Save us.
We're three old fashions in at this point.
Yeah.
We're doing good. We're having fun. We're getting there. But I feel like I'm stalling for time because now it's my responsibility to recap where we're at right now.
It's not a lot has happened.
I don't know, man. It's a pretty deep movie. I mean, there's a lot going
themes.
Underneath.
There's a lot of deep themes in
deep
this one.
Themes. I would say it's like the Jackson Pollock of action movies. It means whatever you want it to mean. So we open the movie. A couple of randos who could be corporate America types are murdered by an elite squad of hitmen. Then we cut to a thug who might be the worst thief in the history of the universe. He's taken to a police station where we meet Action Jackson, who is described as an unhinged cop. But the first line of the movie is his line of the movie is mellow out.
Mellow out.
So it's not really like it's not really proving anything to us. Anyway,
no.
So we know that this evil dude, Delaplane, is getting a best man award. Why is he evil? Well, he's evil because Action Jackson arrested his son.
He says so.
Right.
Because Action Jackson says so.
Right.
Really.
So it's like, oh, okay, we're going to take it on faith. So Jackson goes to the best man of the year awards and nothing happens. Like, that's the first 20 minutes of the movie.
So, it's true.
That is the first 20 minutes of the movie. Things do start happening in the second 20 minutes of the movie. Jackson gets a call from an old friend who was a co-athlete on the high school track team.
Right. Yeah, Jackson was a big high school track
that's
star.
Right.
And
which,
Harvard law grad.
And Harvard law grad. Which his Captain Bill
Those
Duke.
Those two things, similar achievements.
Totally in the same ballpark. Anyway, his buddy Tony, who's clearly a meth head, apparently has been working as a PI for the Auto Workers Union, has a lot of dirt that implicates Delaplane in a massive conspiracy to bring down the union.
Yes, because it's been like a series of murders in like union land.
Yes, exactly. Which to this point have been unconnected to the rest of the movie, but Tony brings it home for us. And Tony tells Jackson that the person he needs to talk to about this is Delaplane's mistress, Vanity,
right,
who we see doing a song and dance for Delaplane before he takes her back to his place, presumably for sex, and then instead gets her high on heroin with a retro 20s-style needle. Anyway, Jackson correctly interprets that the person he should go talk to is not Delaplane's mistress, but instead his wife. And so Action Jackson goes to Delaplane's wife, who is Sheridan Stone.
And she's just overheard some incriminating shit.
That's right. She knows that something's going on, but she has no context for it.
Sure.
Because Delaplane hires all of his goons to also double as his personal staff.
I know. Where does he find those guys?
I have no idea. Multi-talented
individuals,
though.
He's got like eight goons. He's got eight goons on the payroll.
Yeah.
All of whom have like speaking roles.
Yeah.
Like, it's just way too many characters.
So many characters.
Anyway,
so he gets there and he like wants to talk to her, and she's like, hey, if you get me out of this house because this butler / goon doesn't want me to leave.
He probably wants to kill me.
I'll tell you whatever you want to know.
Yeah.
And so off they go. We're off to the races, and that's 40 minutes into the movie.
Yes. So So we're back in downtown Detroit now, and that same hoodlum character from the beginning, he's back on his bullshit, like looking for people to rob, I guess. Mm-hmm. Right? If you thought his arc was finished after the earlier scene in the police station, you should have been right.
Right.
But you're far from it.
Far from
we've
right.
seen far from the last we've seen of this character.
He has almost as much screen time as Carl Weathers has.
Absolutely. So this kid wanders into the bar, he sees Action Jackson there, and he bolts out. That's the extent of his contribution to this scene.
To this scene, yeah.
Was just, he was there, and then he left. So, I'll repeat, through the entire course of this movie, there's no need for this character to exist.
I do feel like this is sort of a case of Chekhov's goon, though, or Chekhov's thief.
Like if you establish, this is the exception that proves the rule, though.
If you establish a thief in the first act, he must do something.
He must do something later?
Yeah.
But he has not and will not do a single thing to further the plot of this movie.
No. Absolutely not.
So, at the bar, Sharon Stone is explaining the situation to Action Jackson. And she says, I heard the butler guy on the phone. He was talking about Tony. He was talking about Action Jackson. She says they were also talking about having some issues with someone named O'Rooney, but that they would have him under control soon. This shit, like, this is a shit scene to have to act for Sharon Stone.
Oh, yeah.
Doing this, and she's doing pretty well, like, because this is, it's hard to dump exposition.
Yeah.
And also to have it feel authentic, but, like, I feel like she's kind of getting it done. So, Action Jackson then says, O'Rooney used to be an associate of Delaplane's, but now he works for the auto workers union. Then he says, are you familiar with the name? And I feel like she had like literally just said she didn't know who that was.
Right. She did literally in that moment.
But so that's the thing about Action Jackson as a character. And this is because of the way he's written and not because of Carl Weathers, but he just comes off like he's a dim-witted guy.
Yeah, absolutely. You know? Yeah. The script is just so bad. There's only so much you can work with. It's not Carl Weathers.
He's just doing the lines he's told.
Yeah, absolutely.
The lines are that of like, there's some guy named O'Rooney. I don't know who that is. Are you familiar with the name? The fuck?
Right.
Dude, I feel that way sometimes when I'm like out on a date. Sometimes I'm like, I feel like someone's got like ADD. Like you might've said something and then like the media follow up would indicate that they were not listening.
Right. Right.
It's like, okay. It just gets, I'm quick to anger in those situations. I fly off the handle. No, I'm kidding.
I think it would be hilarious if Sharon Stone was just like, I literally just told you I didn't know him.
I don't know who he is.
Like, do you need medication? I can help you.
Yeah.
No, but the sense that I get is Carl Weathers just like skimmed over the dialogue and just wanted to see how many action scenes that he was in. I'm on every page. Good enough. Right. And then he gets to the set and he's like, oh, shit.
So Action Jackson then asks Sharon Stone, what do you know about the other guys that got killed?
Yeah.
She says, only what I read in the newspaper, like the most cliched line ever. Like it's one of those that you knew what she was going to say,
mm-hmm.
but she still like kind of makes it work. I like Sharon Stone in this role.
I just feel like you like the sauna scene and then you are just giving her. I like the sauna scene
too, but it's kind of clear. I can see why she became a big star.
Yeah. Oh yeah. She's a phenomenally talented actor.
Because she's you can't take your eyes off her when she's on camera and like everything she's actually working.
Yeah.
She's, you know.
Yeah.
Anyway, she says, yeah, she only knows what she read in the paper. She says the husband doesn't bring his work life home. Except for this weekend, he is hosting a big party for that union president at the house. I love that bit. Like, he never does this except for this one time. So she finds it strange, though, because she said she thought these two guys hated each other. And then Action Jackson remarks under his breath that Delaplane must be used to people hating him. Sharon Stone says she knows Action Jackson doesn't like Delaplane, but that he just doesn't really know him. You know, you don't make it as big as Delaplane has without making some enemies, which is probably actually true.
It is true, but also in the previous scene, Delaplane literally drives away rolling a window up in her face.
She's a very good wife.
Immediately
She's
preceding
like a dream
scene.
Wife.
I know, exactly.
So now, she says that she met him after his wife had died and his son went to prison, and she thinks those events had really changed him. You know, she says, he's not the man you think you know. But you drop a detail about a dead wife in, and you know there's more to that story.
There's always.
So Action Jackson asks, well, what do you think about me? Which is a fucking weird segue.
There's no transitions in this
movie. Enough about the case.
Right. I know.
Let's talk about me.
I haven't had sex in 2 days.
So she says that she thinks that Delaplane and Action Jackson are very similar, and that Delaplane secretly likes Action Jackson because he's managed to like continually get the better of him.
Mm-hmm.
Which we get this a lot on this podcast where like the villain or the hero, they're like obsessed with each other.
Yeah.
They're like clinically though obsessed with you. Like think about like Caster Troy and Sean Archer. Like they had an unhealthy obsession with each other.
It was the worst codependent
marriage.
Like
it was almost like we want to fuck each other more than we want to kill each other.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like that whole movie would not have existed if they had just made love. Like that movie opened with them having sex. Like the rest of the movie would not have occurred. Like, why are we fighting as they're smoking cigarettes? Yeah. You know, I mean, it would just been so easy.
But I think it's true. They're very similar personalities. Yeah. So they butt heads, right?
Yeah.
But so now Action Jackson says, okay, well, we should be on our way. So now they're leaving the bar and Action Jackson asks, can you get me an invitation to that party that Delaplane's throwing for the union boss? Which we should probably note, this is not Action Jackson's case to be working on.
No, at no point was he assigned this.
I think he's technically breaking rules by even probably speaking to her
All he was supposed to go was go to the Man of the Year festival. Yeah. Like, that's literally all he was supposed to do.
If this was his case, he doesn't need to con his way into the party.
Nope.
He could just say, like, hey, we need to talk. This is police business, right?
Yeah.
But so then, in a total change of subject, Sharon Stone asks, well, why do people call you Action Jackson? And it's at that moment that this taxi cab like swerves at him out of traffic and almost runs him down. It's like a nice moment. I'm sure that was like definitely in the trailers.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
For the movie.
Yeah.
So Action Jackson, he grabs Sharon Stone, pulls her out of the way. We see that it's being driven by that hitman that killed Tony earlier and the getaway raft guy. So Action Jackson tells her, go wait for me at the police station. I have to catch a cab.
So we are now over 40 minutes into the movie.
Halfway in.
Yeah. And this is the first action sequence of a movie called Action Jackson.
And the first time that Jackson himself has done anything.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, I guess you could argue that the assassination on the boat was an action sequence.
Yeah.
But it was super boring. And like the murder in the beginning, I guess, was kind of, but all of this, like, we don't want random henchmen doing the action. We want Action Jackson doing the action.
Right. Let's let our hero do something.
And now it's like 40 minutes into the movie and we're finally getting some.
Yeah. So with that pretty decent one action movie, like one liner of I have to catch a cab.
It's good. I'll give him
that. He goes sprinting off after the taxi cab and he somehow like catches up with it.
Chasing it down. I mean, like they pay off the high school
track team. High school track stars.
Yeah.
The skills are on full display.
That's right.
Carl Weathers, though, is a damn athlete.
Dude, like, that man, Jesus
like
Christ.
Like sprinting down the sidewalk in dress shoes.
Mm-hmm.
He was like flying.
Mm-hmm.
But Carl Weathers was an NFL player.
Oh, really? Like, oh, okay.
Isn't it weird that they made like the character Action Jackson's athletic pedigree is weaker than the actual actor?
Right.
Like, could it not have been that Action Jackson used to play for Detroit Lions?
Why not?
I mean, come on.
Yeah, why not? Yeah, I know. Totally.
With the camera, they were doing some camera tricks to make him look like he was really running fast, and they kind of were working. It was cool.
I mean, I got to be honest, even with the camera tricks, you could tell he was in a dead sprint.
Yeah, he flies.
Yeah.
There's that famous scene in Rocky III where he's training Rocky up to fight Clubber Lang, and they're foot racing on the beach.
Yeah.
And you can tell that Carl Weathers is like having to run half pace just so Stallone can keep up with him.
I know. It was bonkers. I remember that scene. It's an iconic scene.
Yeah, for sure. So now Action Jackson, he flies onto the roof of the cab.
I don't even remember how
he's yelling at the guy, stop, and then he just springs into the air like a fucking superhero.
I mean, I guess he was a pole vaulter as well.
Yeah,
so.
Sure. So he went airborne, leaps onto the roof of the cab. The hitman's swerving right and left, trying to make him fall off the roof. But he's sideswiping other cars. There's like huge explosion that happens.
Love
in the
it. 80s style explosions.
Real explosions.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. That movie doesn't fuck around when it comes to explosions.
No,
but.
No. Dude, like, we've talked about this in a couple of movies at this point, but, like, the explosions in Red Dawn were just next level, right? I mean, I miss those old school practical explosions. Like, you can practically feel the heat radiating off the screen. Ugh, they don't make them like that anymore. I mean, literally, they don't make them like that anymore. No, they don't do it.
Now it's like, we can CGI some explosions.
Right, exactly. Like, just throw into After Effects and we'll be done.
So now the driver, he pulls a pistol out and he starts shooting up through the roof of the cab. And Action Jackson screams out, "Enough is enough," and smashes out the windshield with his fist.
With his fist.
There's this recurring theme that when you make him mad, like he sort of snaps or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
So the hitman slams on the brakes and Action Jackson, he goes flying off the front of the cab. He pops up to his feet and he's locked in a stare down now with the hitman. The hitman, he seems like he's ready to shoot Action Jackson. Who shows him, you know, "I don't have a gun," and he starts screaming at him like that it'd be chicken shit to shoot an unarmed man.
Yeah, yeah.
Ashton Jackson's like saying, "I know you killed Tony," and I wasn't sure if that was, do you think he recognized him from the hallway?
Sure. Let's give the movie that.
Maybe he did, or maybe it's more just like in general. I don't know.
But
so Ashton Jackson tells him, "Be a man, come and get me." Which I don't even think a seasoned hitman is going to be swayed by this.
No.
But.
Well, this is a classic movie trope, though, where it's just like the hero taunts the villain or the villain taunts the hero to come down to their level.
Yeah, let's fight on even footing.
And then inevitably the hero wins. Like one of my favorites of those was in Captain America: The Winter Soldier, which I love, by the way.
Yeah, sure.
And like they face off in Batroc the Leaper and the first act of the movie. And Captain America, by this point, has basically murdered an entire militia of bad guys on this boat. And Batroc is like, "Oh, you hide behind your shield. You're not allowed to, you won't fight me like a man." And so, like, Captain America's like, "Fine." He drops his shield, takes off his mask, and in three hits, knocks Batroc unconscious.
Hell yes.
And, like, I love how they play up that man to man fight because at no point is Captain America, like, even remotely threatened by this guy.
Yeah. But of course. Well, you gotta, like, get whatever. Action Jackson's trying to, like, get this guy. But. It doesn't seem like it would work, but it does because the hitman then revs his engine and just drives straight at Action Jackson. And Action Jackson does a full fucking front flip over the car to avoid being hit. And that shit was insane.
I think it would have been way better if they had played the $6 million man.
Absolutely, dude. I think the hitman's mind was blown as much as the rest of us because he's like just looking back over his shoulder in amazement and just plows into a car in front of him. His car goes airborne. It flies into this building. Fucking shit's crazy. It was like Last Action Hero vibes, where it was like a sort of an unintentional satire
of the
very movie that it's trying to be. But so Action Jackson, he runs into the wreckage. The car's empty. The hitman's gone. So now later on, Action Jackson returns to the police station with his clothes all in tatters. Bill Duke asks him what happened. And Action Jackson says dry cleaning, which I guess is supposed to be a joke, but I'm not sure what the actual joke is. Like, is it the cleaners fucked his clothes up?
It needed one more line.
Or all my other clothes are at the cleaners.
Exactly. All my other clothes are at dry cleaning.
Or like, I couldn't tell if he was saying that the dry cleaners did this to my
shit. Exactly.
I don't know. It doesn't make sense. It didn't make sense the way it was.
No.
But Bill Duke then, he's quickly called away to take a phone call.
Yes.
So Action Jackson, then he asked this desk sergeant guy, "Did Sharon Stone come by the police station?" Dude says, "Yeah, she was here, but she left already. She left you a note," which this whole chase did not take that long. Like, the fact that she's already like given up waiting and left is a little bit weird to me.
Yeah.
But maybe Action Jackson was like held up dealing with the aftermath of this shit.
Here's what I'm going to posit. That after that one cab chased him down, he was too worried about any other forms of public transportation. Okay. And so he walked all the way back to the police station.
Yes.
That's my contribution.
It was like 10-mile walk.
It was a 10-mile walk.
Absolutely.
Yeah, exactly.
Why not? So now this note from Sharon Stone says that even though she knows Action Jackson disagrees, she loves her husband and she has to tell him everything.
Uh-oh.
And it reads very much like the note from like a secret lover, you know, which I guess is the point because the sergeant like makes some sort of joke about it. Now, apparently, though, the phone call for Bill Duke must have been something to do with like the carnage.
That's what I assumed. Yeah.
Because he pops out of the office. He's very mad at Action Jackson. "Where's Jackson?" And like a fucking literal cartoon.
I know.
Like we get the little note is like drifting down the air.
Drifting in
like,
the air. I know. Unbelievable.
We need like a sound effect like pew, like he's gone or some shit.
Yeah.
But later on at Vanity, she's performing now at the crowded nightclub. Action Jackson is there seated by himself at the very best table in the club. He's like, the guy's at himself at like a four top. You know?
Dude, I don't know how he gets into this place.
He's got the leather jacket with the sleeves rolled up.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Oh, the dude. Yeah, the classic. The absolute classic.
So this performance by Vanity goes on for several minutes.
Yeah, another music video
for sure.
So
sort of a provocative, like, slow sex song.
Yeah.
And a long, like, musical number to drop in the middle of your movie. But Vanity wanders out into the crowd. She approaches Action Jackson's table, giving this, like, personal performance. Apparently, I read, like, that Paula Abdul did the choreography, the dance choreography.
Oh, interesting.
This, which is kind of weird, as it is.
Yeah, I mean.
But like you had pointed out, like, when we were watching, like, you can see right through her shirt.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It's just this clear lace.
Totally
shit.
Sheer.
Like, I'm like, I don't think this could be on TV.
No, there's
no way.
You can,
like, see everything.
Yeah.
But the song ends, and they're just, like, staring each other down. And I feel like every other fucking person at Joey's Club Elite would be like, what the fuck is going on here?
This is also the point where I notice that everybody smokes a pack of cigs a minute. Because every set is, like, just densed in this practically impenetrable haze. And it's particularly noticeable in this scene.
It gets real smoky in the second half of the movie.
Oh, my God. So smoky. And this is, like, the turning point.
Yeah, I just got to say also, Joey's Club Elite is like the most strip clubbiest name
ever. If it's not a strip club, they're really missing an opportunity.
But now back at the Delaplane mansion, he walks in and his house looks like it's fucking on fire.
Right,
it's full of smoke.
It's full of smoke.
Like someone started a fire and forgot to open the flue up or whatever.
Yeah.
So
now
the butler, like any good butler, hands him a freshly cleaned 357 Magnum. And Delaplane's like, we'll test it in the morning. I don't know what the fuck. That's a fucking weird thing to say.
It is super strange, but it's clearly a setup, right? It's clearly a setup.
He asked, I guess, if Sharon Stone come home, and the butler says no. So Delaplane takes his pistol. He heads upstairs, enters the bedroom where Sharon Stone is just sitting in the dark crying. We don't know how long she's been there. Presumably hours.
Yeah. Again, Action Jackson walks everywhere now.
So... Delaplane takes the pistol, he tucks it in the back of his belt, walks over to her. He says, I was worried about you. The butler said you didn't come home. And she says she snuck in. There's something wrong with the butler. She says she overheard him on the phone talking about the late Tony in Action Jackson. And for me, again, like Sharon Stone's doing heroic work in like a tough scene to play.
But this is the thing that I love about the scene. It's so like she's actually working hard.
Really?
To be believable. Meanwhile, Craig T. Nelson is just like chewing the scenery and loving every minute of it. And you can tell that they are just in two different movies.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like Craig T. Nelson.
He understands this is a bad movie.
Exactly.
He's a guy who's already made it.
Yes.
And she's a struggling actor who's like trying to show what she can
do. Yes, exactly. And so these two are actors in two completely different movies that just somehow wind up in the same scene together.
But this is a scene that we've all seen like a million fucking times right?
Yeah,
and she's like got to try to do her best, right?
Yeah.
I've never been like a big Sharon Stone fan or anything like that really, but watching this movie, it's clear she's a star.
Yeah.
Like she's got something about her that no one else in this movie has.
Yeah.
She's acting circles around like everyone else in every scene that she does. Especially because she's a fucking fully one-dimensional character. There's nothing about her except she's like the dutiful wife who is like, I don't know what to do. Like, you rolled up the window in my face. I didn't know what to do. I'm so scared.
I appreciate that you give her the benefit of the doubt and give her one dimensions because I was clocking her at like half a dimension.
I want to praise her though because she's not going to be part of this movie much longer. You know what I mean? So Delaplane tells her, well, there must be some misunderstanding and asks if she trusts him. And she says, I do trust you, but I need to hear you say that you're not mixed up in these murders. And he hugs her. He swears he's not involved. We see that he's got that pistol in the back of his belt while they're hugging. He says he would never do anything to hurt her. Then she says, well, I just hope that Action Jackson's going to understand. And like the sinister music comes
fatal
in.
Fatal flaw. Yeah. Fatal flaw.
Delaplaine's like, did you talk to Action Jackson about what you told me? And she says, well, he came by right after you left and I told him everything, but I assured him that you couldn't be involved in this.
Oh, nothing. No, not possibly.
She walks to the other side of the room. We see like Delaplaine sort of smile vanishes. She says, I was just so scared and you wouldn't talk to me. Then she's like, I don't know what to do. And she runs over to him and he's like, just please don't hate me. Just like, aw. So I feel for her. And now we see the pistols like not tucked in the back of his belt anymore. Uh-oh. Then
like
they
start sign.
Kissing like very awkward.
I don't know what that was supposed to be.
They were aggressively like oof. Attacking each other's faces.
Oof.
They both got real horny all of a sudden.
Yeah.
So Delaplaine says, I love you. Just as a gunshot rings out, Sharon Stone looks shocked as he lowers her down onto the bed and he proceeds to start kissing and nuzzling on her her lifeless body. Is extra creepy.
So creepy.
Then he takes the diamond ring off her finger for some reason and lights up a cig. Just weird moves. I don't know what the point is, that he's either nonchalant or that he sort of got off on it.
I don't remember them paying off the wedding ring at any point.
Yeah,
right?
That was kind of weird to
me.
Right,
exactly, yeah. So, and I feel like the lighting of the cigarette is, you know, post-coital.
Like that's right. It's like he got off on
this. Yeah, exactly. That's what I assume with the cigarette. But the removing the wedding ring, I'm like, are you going to give it to Vanity? Or like, what's your next move here, bro? You know?
So at that moment, the butler and Al Leong, they burst in with guns out. And Delaplaine casually tells him, the gun works fine, and tosses it to the butler. The
payoff for that gag.
Also, the decor in that mansion is fucking ass, dude. It was like all pastels and floral print, like wallpapers and stuff like that. But I feel like that's like, it was everybody's house, I think, in that era. So cut to backstage. Now back at the club, Vanity appears to have just finished up her performance. She's gone into the little dressing room, whatever. She opens up her small case and just like starts like lovingly caressing her heroin gear. It's fucking weird.
It is really weird.
Action Jackson, meanwhile, he's wandering around backstage looking very fucking like much like a person who does not belong here, you know?
Right, which is famously how you walk into places that you're not supposed to belong. It's like, I don't know if I'm supposed to belong here.
Now he encounters the big guy, Ed, who was protective of Vanity earlier on.
Who weirdly talks about being a Muslim.
Yeah, it gets weird. So Ed asks Action Jackson, what do you want? He says, I'm looking for Vanity, basically. And he's like, I don't recommend that. And then Action Jackson punches him in the stomach to like no effect at all.
No effect.
Right?
Yeah.
Then Action Jackson's like, you're a big guy. What do you weigh? And it's like 270, which I feel like that's actually kind of seems low.
That seems low for that guy. Yeah.
But Action Jackson's like, that's pretty big. And then like sucker punches him in the face. And Ed gives this like great just sort of smile at him. Like, he's like, why'd you do that? And then Action Jackson's like, I bet you get paid pretty well for this, huh? And that's where Ed's like, I'm paying my way through med school.
Yeah.
And then he's like, if I hit you again, I bet you're going to slam me through that wall, aren't you? And he's like, I was thinking about it, but that goes against all my Muslim beliefs.
Right? Like, okay.
I feel like Ed is already the most like fully fleshed out character in the movie.
We know he's going to med school.
Right.
And he's a Muslim. Like he's a pacifist.
He's a character with like contrast.
Right. Exactly. He's a bodyguard who's also a pacifist.
Yeah.
He clearly has deep feelings for this Vanity character.
The most well-developed character in the movie.
And he did it in like four lines.
Yeah.
I feel like someone else wrote that scene.
Yes, that does.
Right,
that
like
feels
someone.
Accurate.
This is a scene that was in another movie that they liked, and they put in this movie, and it just doesn't. It feels so weird because Ed is so inconsequential. I mean, this isn't the last time we're going to see him.
No, not at all.
But he is.
It's weird later.
He's such a minor character.
But yeah, so then Action Jackson turns like he's going to walk away. Then he whirls around and he sort of tackles Ed through the door, and Ed cracks his head on like a table or something like that, and he's out cold. So then Vanity, who seems like she just finished shooting up, is like, I guess she liked my act. But she's very chill with the fact that this dude attacked her bodyguard and broke into her dressing room. Now she's very impressed that Action Jackson made it past Ed. Then he says something sort of swaggerish, and she like whipped her head around. There was a sound effect. Whoosh. Like when she turned her head around.
I couldn't believe they did the sound effect.
It was bizarre.
Oh my God.
So Vanity, she appears to be like very high, very horny.
Yes.
And she's slurring her words and mumbling, but she's very happy just to run away with Action Jackson.
No questions asked.
This is that type of heroin that just makes you really horny all the time, I guess.
Right, apparently.
Which I Googled, and heroin is decidedly not a drug that enhances sex.
I feel like
it's quite the opposite what I read.
And it's totally sedative, and it's just like she's behaving like she's on E or something, right? Like, and it's just
she's acting like she's high on weed is what I feel like.
But
she's not acting like someone
who's on heroin. No.
Which is weird because I feel like Vanity herself was a heroin user.
Yeah, she was. So you think she should just could draw from her life experience.
Right? Well, so they whip out of there in Action Jackson's Impala. As they're driving along, Vanity's stroking his ear. And it's like pulling away. She's doing this weird shit where she's like licking her fingers and then like touching it like a sexy wet willy.
Because wet willies are definitely sexy.
So she seems frustrated that they're not fucking already. Right?
Yeah.
She's like, what's your name? And he says, it's Jericho. She's like, got a nickname, which is a weird follow-up. And that's a fucking terribly forced dialogue.
Yeah.
Right? And he's like, well, some people call me Action. And she's like, Action? Shit, I ain't seen none of that tonight. It wasn't a woman that gave you that name. I'll reiterate, she met this dude at most probably like 30 minutes ago, and she is pissed that he's not fucking her already.
Yeah. I do love the way, too, that on the drive, she specifically asked, don't you listen to any rap stations?
Rap stations. So weird.
Like, what a specific, like, anyway. Yeah.
So they approach Action Jackson's building, and there's a lot of police all around out front. And Action Jackson senses that something's wrong, so he drives on past. Vanity seems just, like, completely oblivious to the fact that there's, like, a dozen police cars and ambulances and shit.
Yeah.
So he pulls in this parking lot across the street. And she seems hopeful that, like, now we're going to fuck now.
Yeah.
But he turns on his police radio. They overhear the chatter that, like, the body of Delaplane's wife was found in his apartment. And despite the fact that they're, like, mentioning the name of her lover, like, Vanity seems just like she's not paying. This means nothing to her.
I mean, I will give her the benefit of the doubt here. I mean, if she's that high on heroin, like, she's not noticing any of this, right?
But so he's like, well, you can't stay here. So he peels out, tells her we're going to go to your place, which she's into. Now, inside the apartment, Action Jackson's ex-partner, he's working the crime scene. Biff and his partner are there also. And I don't think it makes any sense for any of these people to be there.
None whatsoever.
Like, the ex-partner's like up to his neck in murder cases already.
Oh, my God.
I feel like there would be another homicide detective assigned to this one.
And two beat cops would not be on a crime scene like this.
Well, they work like all hours, all beats. Like, they're everywhere they need to be.
How convenient.
Now, in the bedroom, though, the coroner from earlier, he's there. And he, like, he whips the sheet off, naked, blood-soaked Sharon Stone. Is like, women this beautiful don't come around too often. And I've always got to see them like this.
Ugh.
Like, what the fuck, dude?
Woof. Woof.
Dude's like, get a look at how hot this dead, naked woman is.
There is every single line of dialogue that this character says in the movie is creepy as fuck.
Yeah.
There's not a single normal line. Like, he is definitely a serial killer.
He's like, look it. Look at how hot she is, guys. Everyone.
Oh,
come around. It's like, dude, is there, like, I feel like they'd be like, cover her up.
No,
like,
dude.
There's dignity.
You should stop now.
For the corpse. Like, please. Please cover her body back up, sir. Stop he's telling like, us how hot she is.
Like, he's taking all these photos, and, and the other cops are like, hey, are those for like the file? And he's like, yes, for the file.
I think this is the first time I've ever seen gratuitous corpse nudity in a movie.
I mean, I'll see it. I mean, like, it's in, like, Dead Like Me, or not Dead Like Me, 6 Feet Under.
Okay.
Or, like, any show that is on Showtime that is true crime, right?
Okay.
Like, you're not going to see it on CSI or NCIS.
Wait,
they always shoot around it, right?
Yeah.
But, yeah, like, on like a movie or an HBO show that deals with true crime, you'll see that kind of corpse nudity. But also, it's never presented in a sexy way.
In a salacious way.
Right, right.
Get a look at how hot she is.
Right. All these actors are,
what?
Like, gray, and, like, they're made to look disgusting, and you know what I'm saying? Like, she
was not, like, it's not salacious.
No, it's
right?
not
like,
salacious at
this
all.
This is, like, this dude's literally, like, look how hot this babe is.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like, dude. Anyway, I also feel like with just with forensics, this would be sorted out pretty quickly. Like,
yeah.
Right. They'd be like, oh, she wasn't killed here. Her body was moved here. Why would right. Action Jackson do that?
Yeah.
Also, like, they could determine the time of death. Right. Yeah. And like, he's been at the nightclub and with Vanity all night.
Yeah.
Like, he didn't do this.
I mean,
but you know, it's a movie. So
by the time they carted her body from Delaplaine's house to Action Jackson's apartment, she would have bled out. Like, she was would have completely exsanguinated by this point.
Yeah. I think she was dead on the bed when he was like kissing her.
Right. Exactly. So there's no blood that, I mean, like, anybody's going to look at this.
There's no blood splatter in the apartment.
No,
there's
nothing.
The body was clearly brought here afterwards. She died 4 hours ago.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
Like, where are the clothes? You know, I mean, like, it's all, none of this makes any sense.
None of it.
But no, they're totally bought in on it.
Yeah. They think, well, God, it must be Action Jackson, yeah. I guess. So now, elsewhere, Vanity is leading Action Jackson into her place. And I feel like it's that same, like, love nest location we saw earlier on, right?
Yeah.
Where she boned Della Plain, I guess.
He boned her. I don't know that she had anything to do with
lifeless,
it.
Lifeless, unconscious body. But it's like nothing but fucking glass brick walls and pastels fucking weird, colorful lighting coming from just out of frame.
Oh, Jesus.
Weird shit.
Yeah.
So he tells her, don't turn on the lights, which she's like, oh, romantic. Then she's like, I got the munchies. It's like, I feel like that's not heroin, I think.
No.
So she goes to the kitchen. She opens the fridge up. Then Action Jackson's like, whoa, shut that door. Comes over, closes the door. Now the phone starts ringing. Action Jackson's like, do you normally get a lot of calls this late at night? And she's like, well, I'm a popular girl. And then the answering machine, it picks up. Action Jackson, I guess, senses that something is wrong.
How is unclear.
Yeah. He grabs her. Dives for cover just as there's this huge explosion. Then Action Jackson, he picks up Vanity. She's very shaken and he rushes her out of there.
Woof.
We got to talk though about what just happened here.
Yeah.
So who was the target?
I have no idea.
Here. I feel like, wouldn't it have to be Vanity?
Why would it be Action Jackson?
They don't know he's going to come to her apartment.
No.
Other, like, this, that's a decision that was made in the last 15 minutes.
Right, exactly. Like, he had no idea. He finally goes to see Delaplaine's mistress.
Right.
Right. Sharon Stone's character.
He didn't meet her until tonight.
Right, exactly.
So I don't see how it
There's
could be
no connection.
Directed. I don't see how that bomb could be meant to have killed Action Jackson.
Right. So Delaplaine is trying to kill Vanity? Right? Is that which, what?
And why?
Right. And then also, yeah, it's all like, it's so confusing that scene.
Why would he want her killed before she had met Action Jackson, which also didn't happen until tonight?
Till tonight. Right. Exactly. He had to plant the bomb.
Has it just always been wired to blow up just in case?
I love the idea that every time Delaplaine gets a new mistress, he immediately wires her apartment to blow.
We got you.
Just on the off chance.
Just in case.
Just
she might
in
be
case.
Talking to the cops. Yep. She was nagging me a little too much earlier.
Yeah, she was. She was nagging him just a little bit too much.
Yeah, I gotta blow her up.
I love the idea that, like, he gets the calls like, sir, she's going back to his apartment.
Someone's in the apartment. We saw the lights come on.
Right, and it's Action Jackson, and Delaplaine goes,
shit.
Two birds with one stone.
Activate the bomb.
Right, exactly. Like, this is too perfect. I was going to blow her up anyway.
Yeah, it's just very weird.
It's really hard to, like, help the screenwriter in this moment. This scene makes so little sense.
I couldn't figure it out. I couldn't for the life of me.
Even in the bizarre reality that this movie exists in, none of the characters would have a reason to blow this apartment up.
Yeah, I didn't understand it at all.
Nope.
And why did he, like, he seemed aware she must be being watched
exactly.
at all times, even
yeah.
from the moment they came in.
Detective's intuition? I don't know. I mean, it was so... This was without a doubt my least favorite scene in the whole movie.
it didn't make a lot of sense.
I couldn't rationalize it away at any level. Yeah.
As a scrupulous, like, movie watcher.
Oh, as someone,
you're like, what the fuck just happened? You expecting me just to swallow this?
I have been, like, swallowing my suspension of disbelief for so long on this movie, and this scene is just like, nope. Movie, you failed.
Fuck
you
it.
Failed movie.
I'm done with you. Fuck it. Yeah.
By the way, the name of the movie was said in the first 5 minutes of it. So
I know we should have all walked out.
You're free to go, ladies and gentlemen.
No, I think Look, I'm going to tell you right now, listeners, it doesn't get better from here.
No, it does not. No,
it gets more disjointed almost, the story.
No, we do actually start getting some action.
Yeah, there's a fair little amount bit. Of action.
Yeah, from this point on. But the ratio from action to sensicalism, like, definitely goes down. Like, as little sense as this movie was making to this point, it just, this is the turning point. There's no more comprehension. So just, if you coming back for the next few episodes, don't expect any of this to make any sense.
Be aware. You know what you're signing up for. No, I'm just kidding. I promise you, these next couple episodes bringing you home are going to be amazing.
So good.
Because this movie gets so weird.
Yeah.
And there's so many more characters to be introduced.
Right. We have not even introduced all the characters yet. No.
Yeah, no, it's about to get real weird.
Oh, there's, so, oh, I can't wait.
I'm looking forward to
this. This is going to be good.
Yeah.
I can't wait.
We appreciate you listening as always. Thanks for joining us. And we'll be back.
We'll be back.